Adventures with Words is brought to you by Audible. Try Audible free for 30 days and download any audiobook for free. To start your free trial, go to www.adventureswithwords.com/audible.
Hello and welcome to episode 9 of Adventures with Words, where we explore storytelling in all its forms. I'm Rob.
I'm Kate.
So this week we thought we'd spend a bit of time catching up, finding out what we've both been reading, what we have read and what we're about to read. So Kate, what have you just read lately?
I recently finished reading Carter Beats the Devil by Glenn David Gould, which was a recommendation. I thought the cover was really striking. I'm often moved to pick up a book because the cover looks interesting.
Mm. So on the cover, it's sort of painted in an old school style 1920s, 1930s sort of playbill poster, isn't it?
Yeah, it's in the style of a sort of advert that you get outside a theatre, and it shows a magician wearing the most sort of fantastic turban playing cards with the devil, obviously linking to title.
Yes, yeah.
So that sort of drew me in, and plus you've got all the various recommendations from all sorts of people, including Magical from The Independent on Sunday. So yeah, I really enjoyed reading this actually.
Well, I'm glad that, because it was me that recommended it to you.
Good job, really, then.
Yes, and it's one of my favourites as well.
Mm.
And well, you told me really, but what you thought?
Okay, well, I hadn't really heard of this author before. I mean, I wasn't sort of particularly aware of anything that he'd written, but as I said, it was just something that intrigued me, and I found it a really interesting read. I'm reading a lot of detective kind of thriller style books at the moment, which didn't used to be my thing at all, but I'm quite getting into that type of story. And this fitted into that in a really interesting way. You've got the story of Carter, who is the magician, or illusionist or escapologist or however you want to describe him, sort of man of many talents. And woven around his story of sort of growing up and becoming the person that he does by the end of it is also a sort of murder mystery where the president of the United States appears to have been murdered or appears have died in sort of strange and suspicious circumstances, and for one reason or another it's linked back to Carter because the president takes part in the finale of his show on the evening where he dies. And there's a very tenacious agent called Griffin who sort of attempts to uncover the mystery, and he thinks Carter might have something to do with it, so he's investigating. And sort of in between that you have this sort of current narrative, if you like, which is set in San Francisco in the early 1900s, but also then the kind of parallel narrative of how Carter got to this point in the first place. So sort of learning how to do illusions, being almost like a sort of apprentice to another magician, the sort of figure who's called Mysterioso. And he appears early in the book, sort of rather unpleasant figure. So he's like a sort of contrast to Carter.
Now, Charles Carter was a real person, but this is a fictional sort of biography of his life. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't something I was aware of until I started sort of reading a little bit more. And when you look at the sort of quotes and so on, you realise it's a sort of fictionalised version. There are lots of references to other sort of real magicians, illusionists, escapologists of the time, because obviously this was the big kind of boom time. This was the same sort of time where Harry Houdini was really famous. And lots of other people who it sort of mentions who were the real people performing all around America at the time.
So it was a thumbs up then.
Very much so. I thought it was really well written. The narrative was really fast paced, but also very detailed, very descriptive. I really sort of found myself getting immersed into the book. It's also very sort of sympathetic. It's done very well. So even though you can imagine Carter's possibly a bit of a difficult person to get on with it sometimes, he's very single-minded. He's also drawn in a very sympathetic manner. He's a very sort of positive character. You have sort of his romantic entanglements, which obviously sort of make him sympathetic again, and you know, you're really rooting for him. You're also rooting for Griffin, although hoping that he doesn't get the wrong end of the stick and end up sort of catching Carter. So it's a really, really engaging, really exciting thriller, as well as being interesting in a kind of cultural way, because you've got all the kind of stuff about what America was like at the time. It's prohibition, there's sort of stuff about speakeasies, the way that the police service was, there's lots of kind of historical detail, which I thought was really interesting.
Well, I'm so glad you liked it. It is one of my favourites. I think it is just beautifully written. It's engaging. Magic and thrillers is something that I'm personally interested in. So
yeah,
giving it to you, I was a bit sort of nervous. But,
no, it's a big hit. I really, really enjoyed it. I'd very much recommend it. Is there anyone else who enjoys reading thrillers in general, anyone who's interested in America at that time, or sort of magical things, anything like that? I thought it was great. And to be honest, even if you don't really know anything about the history or the magic or anything like that, I didn't know very much about the magical aspect of it, but I still really enjoyed it. I thought it was great.
There is something there for everyone. You can read it a number of ways.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I read Geoffrey Eugenides' The Marriage Plot. That's the one I've just finished. I read it in hardback, so the cover's not quite the same as the paperback. With my one, it's just mainly a very bold, red, distinctive cover with the title in white and flies.
Yeah.
On the cover. Now, we've both read this.
Yes, we have.
We read it for a book club that we both went to. Yeah. I don't quite understand the flies.
I'm not quite sure about the flies either. The only thing that I can think is it's a bit of a reference to something to do with genetics.
Possibly.
With Leonard's research. I'm sure you'll talk about the characters in a minute.
Well, it's set in the early 1980s.
Yeah.
Our sort of heroine, so to speak, Madeline, she's graduating from Brown University.
Mm-hmm.
She's been an English literature student, something that you and I have both been.
Yeah.
And the book sort of goes through her university life, some of the classes that she goes to. Well, this is kind of why I really enjoyed the book so much, is it did sort of bring back memories of being at university, studying, being a student. But then she has two men enters her life. You have Leonard and Mitchell.
Yes.
Two very different characters there, and these are sort of set up as the two suitors for her.
Yeah, I mean, I quite enjoyed this when I read it as well. I wondered what did you think about the way it kind of reflects the marriage plots that she's studying? Some people have said that's a bit of an artificial, you know, just a kind of a construct, really.
Mm.
Did you think it worked as a story? Was it believable?
I thought it did. Well, I'm trying not to give too much of the plot away here. But she becomes romantically involved with Leonard, and Mitchell sort of looks at her from afar. Leonard's a difficult character from the word go, and he ends up sort of having sort of, well, on the day of graduation, he's committed essentially to a psychiatric ward. And the story goes on from there. I really enjoyed it. I think the marriage plot, which it goes around, didn't really, it's hinted at and talked, discussed about, but it didn't really become an issue.
Were there any particular books that, it directly reminded you of, or did you feel it was more sort of a general nod towards the genre?
I thought it was more of a nod to the genre, bearing in mind I didn't really read around, it's particularly aiming at Austen, isn't it?
Yeah, sort of Austen, Bronte, that kind of thing. I guess it's something that I noticed perhaps more from being a female reader perspective. Perhaps I've sort of read more Austen.
Well, actively, you know, almost avoided it if I could.
Yeah.
So the fact that I did enjoy it might mean I have to go back and read a bit of Austen and look at it differently.
Yeah, I think it's something where that those kind of books are sometimes classed as a sort of a book that a woman would enjoy and a man won't. But the way that this is written is, I do feel it's a sort of an updated version, whatever it is, 150 years on. I think it still works very well. It just shows you it's got that kind of that sort of timeless quality, having this sort of love triangle between characters.
Well, on the blurb, so to speak, of the book, it does ask, are the great love stories of the 19th century dead, or can there be a new story written for today and alive to the realities of feminism, sexual freedom, prenups and divorce? Well, of course, there was no divorce in Austen's time.
No, separation or sort of, living together and seeing as little of each other as possible. Although I would argue that, depending on which Austen you read, it is, it's very feminist.
Mm.
You've got something like Pride and Prejudice, which spells out very clearly that marrying for money is not a good idea. It's same in Sense and Sensibility. The women are strong characters. They, they learn from their mistakes. They're independent. So I think almost that blurb sort of is a bit too negative about Austen.
Possibly, I think so, yeah. Well, I really enjoyed it. I absolutely loved it. I tore through it very quickly.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it for the plot and the characters, I think.
How did you feel about, there is a lot of theory in there. There's a lot of the literary theory. Mm. It doesn't necessarily go into a lot of detail, but it does touch on a lot of the things that you and I probably both looked at uni.
Yeah.
although maybe not all the same things. And then later on, you've got the kind of the scientific theory. I mean, I know some people feel that it.
Well, there was one kind member of spoils our it a bit. Book group who at the start was slightly off, put off by the literary theory, but it's not really something I don't think you need to know. I mean, towards the end, towards the end of the book, there were bits about biology and which I didn't know about.
Yeah.
But I just carried on going. I realized it. Mm-hmm. It's not relevant, but it's a literary book. I'll give it that.
Yeah, I think knowing a bit more about some of the theorists who were mentioned, the literary theorists, yeah. I think it did add something.
Oh,
I think it helped you to appreciate the points that they were making. But I agree. I think really the main point is the love story.
Yeah.
Which is exactly the same as, you know, in the kind of Georgian novels that this is sort of based on, that the stuff, I mean, it does mention things to do with science and, you know, people talk about their new camera and so on, but it's just a device in a plot, really.
Well, I would say, you know, if someone is coming to it and they're not particularly clued up on theory, don't let that put you off. Keep going, because I think it's worth it in the end.
I'd agree. I thought it was really good as well. So I hope people give that one a go.
So what are you reading now?
I'm reading The Stonecutter by Camilla Läckberg. It's yet another one of my kind of crime thriller. I've sort of ploughed through every Scandinavian crime author that I I'm cutting a swathe through as we speak. I've sort of run out of Henning Mankell to read. I've read a lot of Joe Nesbo, so this was the, sort of the next, you know, where they have the stickers that say if you love. I thought, well, I'll give this one a go.
But you see, you've never read all the Stiegs.
No, I didn't. However many pages it was into The Girl with a Dragon Tattoo, I'm afraid all the kind of Nazi history and going on the train had got to me by that point. I didn't persevere.
But just seeing the film now, does that make more sense?
Yes, it does. I think I probably will give it a go. It's on my shelf. Yeah. I have bought it. So, and it's not like me to not finish a book I've started. But I'm into the Läckbergs now. Right. I've kind of got into the series and it's drawn me in. So this is the third one of the series. If you look it up on Goodreads or whatever, they're sort of bracketed Patrick Hedstrom. Sort of that's the
so
series that it's been bracketed under. Well, this is a bit strange. In the first book, the main character is a woman called Erica Falk. She's a sort of journalist stroke non-fiction kind of biography type writer, and she goes back to visit her village where she grew up, which I believe is called Fjallbacka. Mm-hmm. And she finds out that her childhood friend has died. It's winter. She's found frozen in the bath. The first book's called The Ice Princess.
Right.
And she then goes about investigating what's happened to her friend, trying to work it out. She meets Patrick, who's a local policeman, in the course of her investigation, because obviously he's investigating it as well as the police.
Yeah.
And she's definitely the main character. But then at the end of the first book, they're kind of getting together. The second book, they're then in a relationship. She's sort of heavily pregnant, and it's all of a sudden just sort of switches so that she's basically sitting down a lot, being hot and pregnant, and he's doing all the investigating. It's a bit
odd. Did you agree with that, or?
Not really, no. I found it really strange because she's such a strong character. And I thought, oh, this is great. You rarely get a strong female investigative lead in these kinds. It's almost always a man.
Yeah.
So that was quite exciting. I thought, oh, this is great. Yeah, I'm really into this. And she was a really great character, really independent, feisty and intelligent. And I quite liked the fact that she wasn't a policewoman. She was sort of doing this through her analytical skills of being a writer, and so, and that sort of appealed to me. So yeah, it was a bit jarring when all of a sudden it was then just all about her being hot and fat and pregnant. It was a bit strange.
Right.
But she's a bit more energetic in this one. She kind of gets into it a little bit more. But it is really now, it does seem to have become Patrick's.
So that's why it's named after him.
It seems to become his sort of series now, his franchise, if you like.
Yeah.
In this one, it's all sort of set around the same village, the same area on the Swedish coast. And it's a sort of parallel narrative, which is similar in the second book in the series. Also has a kind of parallel narrative, which part of it is in sort of in the past and part of it is in the present, where, funnily enough, a murder has been committed. But it's quite shocking because it's the murder of a young girl called Sarah. She's the daughter of Erica's friend Charlotte. So Erica is involved in this personally. Yeah. And so is Patrick, because Charlotte and Sarah have been to their house. Erica and Patrick have just had their little baby. So it's also kind of a personal thing for them. It's the child of their friend. They can empathize because they're new parents. And so Patrick is investigating Sarah's death. But then in the background, there's also this story of the stonecutter, who's called Anders. And he's originally from a town further down the coast, but he moves to the quarry at Fjallbacka to help with this particular project. When he's there, he meets a bit of a strumpet called Agnes. Agnes is the daughter of the manager of the quarry. She's basically a bit of a one. She's used to having her own way. She's very beautiful. Her dad's wrapped around her little finger. She decides that she wants Anders, but manages to get pregnant, get stuck with him. So there's this kind of narrative of this very, very manipulative woman and how she's trying to make the best of this awful situation she finds herself in with Anders. And all the while you're wondering, how is this going to link up with murder investigation in the present day? Because there must be something.
Yeah, there normally
you know
is,
there
yes.
must be. Yeah. You know, it's in the same place. And there start to be sort of little clues that you think might link this past story to the one that's going on in the present, and maybe it will explain why this little girl was murdered, which seems so bizarre. Yeah, the only kind of modern day motivation to it appears to be that she was a bit of a pain. She had sort of something similar to ADHD,
right,
which I didn't know what it was. The acronym is DAMP, which is a bit unfortunate, D-A-M-P, and I didn't know what that was. I'm normally quite good at these kind of
Is that something lost in translation then, do you think? Or?
It isn't. I looked it up because I was intrigued.
Yeah.
And it's apparently, it's basically a kind of behavioural disorder, but it's an acronym only used in Sweden, which explains why we didn't know. But, I mean, it's basically similar to ADHD. But so this is why it's so strange. It's such a mystery as to what happened to this child and so on. I enjoyed this a lot more than the second one, because I think, you know, Erica's a bit more up to actually doing anything. It's not just about her being stressed out. But I was still a bit disappointed, because I was thinking about this, and it's a really odd portrayal of the female characters by a female writer.
Right.
She's very down on the female characters, apart from one or two, really. She's quite down on some of the male ones as well. Really, the only consistently effective person in the whole thing is Patrick, with his sort of deputy, who's also a male policeman. Quite close behind. But yeah, it's quite a strange portrayal. You know, Erica, as soon as she becomes pregnant, she's sort of hopeless. And then at the beginning of this book, she's probably supposed to have postnatal depression.
Right.
But that's not really being dealt with properly. This other sort of running saga where Erica's sister is in an abusive relationship with her husband Lucas. In the second book, she left him, she was with someone else, then she ends up going back to him, and there's some sort of ambiguity during this third book. We're not actually quite sure what's happened to this poor woman. It's very strange, and I could understand that portrayal more if it was a male writer,
yes.
I think, because it's just such an unsympathetic portrayal. Mm. It's really quite strange for a woman reading another woman's work.
Having read all the Larsons, I was sort of looking around for more the similar type to read. I'm not sure I'd want to read.
No, it is a bit odd. I think out of the various things that I've read so far, I mean, these are pretty grim. They're pretty nasty in places. Not as much so as the Larsons.
Yeah, there were some pretty tough bits in.
Yeah,
there.
I mean, it's not on the same kind of level as that. But in terms of what I'd recommend, I think the Henning Mankell Wallander novels, those series, are really, really good police detective series.
Right.
From that perspective, you know, in terms of that, like that kind of police procedural going through the investigation, it's very detailed. You know, the actual kind of police work stuff is really good. Mm. And I also really like the characters. I think they're a great group of characters.
Right. I was thinking of the Nesbos as well.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing. I mean, the Joe Nesbo books, I enjoyed them equally, but they're very, very different in style. It's much more kind of gritty, grimy, drugs, prostitute, you know, it's all very much. And Harry Hole, who is the main character, the policeman in each of the books, is incredibly flawed. But, you know, to the point where he's clearly abusing his position as a policeman. You know, the last one, he's absolutely out, you know, out of it on drink and drugs for a significant proportion of it and so on. Whereas Wallander, you know, he's not perfect. Yeah. He's got a temper. He ends up with diabetes, which he has to do something about. Mm. But it is much more like a normal, everyday sort of,
yes,
you know, and there's he's got his relationship with his daughter is very important, with his ex-wife and so on. So it's a very different dynamic. Yeah, it's a bit like the difference between watching something like Inspector Morse versus watching The Wire.
Yes.
So, you know, on the one hand, it's kind of recognizable. It's everyday. You know, he's going and seeing the person in the opticians who he knows, and it's the doctor who he knows, and it's, you know, this kind of, and it's very familiar, but the crime is very unpleasant. Whereas obviously Joe Nesbo, the whole thing, it's all kind of intermingle and all corrupt, and it's, you know, backhanders, and everyone's again, you can't trust anyone, and that kind of, so it's a very, very different atmosphere. I think of the two, I'd probably pick Wallander, to be honest.
Oh, right.
Because I just really like the characters. I think, you know, I feel like I know them. Whereas Harry Hole, you know, you feel sorry for him, and you do like him, you do root for him, but God, he'd be a pain in the backside to have to put up with for any length of time. I don't know. I'm not sure whether I would recommend these. I am going to read the next one because I'm hopeful that now Erica be a bit like it, more back to normal again. Yeah. And I sort of hope that Camilla Lackberg doesn't do anything horrible to Erica's sister or whatever in the meantime. But I mean, they're interesting, but I've read better.
Well, I'm reading something slightly different. It is The Titanic Secret by Jack Steele. Mm-hmm. Jack Steele is apparently a pseudonym for someone, but we're not quite sure who. And this asks the question, what if it wasn't an iceberg that sank the Titanic?
What if,
yes. Now, this was given to me to read.
Right.
I went in with some slight preconceptions.
The cover doesn't necessarily look
hopeful. The cover kind of screams out Da Vinci Code wannabe.
Yeah.
So my expectations weren't that high, but so far, I have to say, I'm actually quite enjoying it.
Good.
I don't know quite what it is about it. I mean, I'm about halfway through. Mm-hmm. They're on the Titanic now. But basically what it is the book opens with a man. He's in Germany and he's having, he works for British intelligence.
Yeah.
And he's dealing with some sort of informer.
Right.
And there's some sort of plot going on and there's an exchange, basically, he's exchanging money.
Yes.
He's then chased out from the cafe where they are, and the man's making a run for the British embassy.
Okay.
And the Germans shoot him dead in the street.
Right.
And in his dying words, he sort of gives them a message.
Mm.
And then it cuts to Alex Tremaine, who is our hero.
Right.
And he works for British intelligence.
He sounds very heroic.
Yes, very heroic name. So it's set in 1912, so we are building up to the First World War.
Yes.
Well, he's sent on this mission with an American agent called Maria Weston.
Right.
So it's in the early days of the FBI, CIA, MI5, MI6, mm-hmm. but not quite yet. And it's the head of the British intelligence, Charles Cumming, or C, who then becomes M later on.
Oh, right, yes, sort of okay, yeah.
They always like their initials in these sorts of things.
Yeah.
The plot's not quite explained in a sort of roundabout way. I'm still not quite sure because they don't quite know what's going to happen. But
right.
Alex and Maria are put onto the Titanic, and there's three German agents who have got American passports, and they have to kill these men before it reaches New York.
Okay.
And it's all to do with Germany and America are going to unite, and it's going to be like the downfall of the British Empire.
Oh, interesting.
So it's quite a big plot that's going on.
Yeah.
Now you kind of go into it knowing that the Titanic is going to sink.
Yeah.
So there is this slight inevitability, but you're not quite sure why.
Mm.
Now, I can only guess at this point. I'm assuming that they failed in their mission and that someone somewhere is going to sink the Titanic. There are little plots that Charles Cumming or C, he knows more than he's telling Alex and Maria.
Yeah.
There's bits where he's plotting the course on the map and he's got his finger on a point in the ocean.
Yes.
Where he's thinking, all right, and we all know this, obviously.
Yeah. So, I mean, is the implication, it's, you know, is it submarines or is it...
mention of submarines. So the plot is... You are being sort of brought into the story.
Yeah.
There's intrigue. The way he's describing the Titanic, you know, they're running around first class chasing after these men. It's a countdown against the clock.
Yeah.
So when I went in thinking it was going to be pretty awful, I'm quite pleasantly surprised, actually.
Good.
And I'm intrigued to see how it does turn out. I think these characters are going to sort of be recurring because I know he's got another book out in
October. Yeah, I was going to ask you that, actually. Do you think it's going to be a series?
Well, the next book apparently is something to do with Jack the Ripper.
Right.
So whether these characters, which is obviously a completely different time.
Well, yeah, that's about, well, about 30 that's, years previously.
Yeah, 1880s, if I remember correctly.
Yes, it was.
Whether that's going to be looking at it from, you know, from afar, I'm not too sure, but...
Although, there are sort of conspiracy theories where, although the killing stopped in London, there were various sort of people who said that actually, there were similar things in Paris, or they've said, they said it was in America. So, you know, it's possible. There's that kind of conspiracy theory that he escaped as opposed to being killed or captured or whatever.
Possibly. But if the book carries on the way it is, and I am quite enjoying it, it's a good little page turner, mm-hmm. and I probably would seek out his next book, actually.
Yeah.
The two main characters, he is sort of early Bond, and she's a very feisty, strong woman, but they're having to pretend to be husband and wife on the Titanic, and you can kind of see where it's going to go.
Yeah, so there's a bit of comedy, a bit of tension.
There's a bit of tension there.
Yeah.
The cover probably missells it. I don't know.
I think it's a bit of an odd cover because it's mainly black and white apart from the author's name in red, and then you've got this sort of guy at the bottom.
It's the obligatory shadowy man
sort of shadowy man in a hat and a Mac, kind of looking a bit suspicious.
So it fits sort of into the genre and the Titanic secret. Now, I mean, I don't know what else you'd call it or what else you'd do, but...
No, I don't know. It does also... the first time I saw the cover, it did make me think it sounded like a bit of an innuendo, but perhaps that's just me. I don't know.
Yep, you never know. Moving on. Whoever Jack's deal is has done quite a good job. It feels historically accurate.
Yeah.
And I'm intrigued to see how it sinks, because it's got to, let's face it. So.
Yeah, we know it's going to happen. It's just, that sounds interesting.
Yeah.
Well, my next on the list is Artemis Fowl, the last Artemis Fowl book. I've been waiting for this for quite some time. It's been a while since the last one was released, the penultimate one. Yep. And this book features the return of the sort of big arch enemy, who is a pixie called Opal Cowboy, which will mean nothing to anyone.
Nothing to me. I've never read it, but I can see that you're quite excited.
Yeah, so. I am. This is one of my kind of young adult sort of fantasy adventure series. Basically, Artemis Fowl is when you first meet him in the first book, I think he's supposed to be about 12, and he's a sort of criminal. He's supposed to be like a criminal mastermind, and he is open to the possibility of the fantastical. Basically, he wants to make money, he wants to get rich, and he doesn't care how he does it. So he decides to try and investigate the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, which, you know, he's a 12-year-old, so I guess that's pretty reasonable. His dad has disappeared. His dad was a sort of criminal mastermind before him, but he's gone missing, presumed dead. His mum is sort of mad with grief, basically, never leaves her room, stays in the dark all the time. Yeah. So he's basically been left to fend for himself. He's got a bodyguard who's only ever known as Butler. who it's implied has been trained by the Israeli secret services, and
so it's
kind of the whole series is kind of a mixture of these sort of real world spy criminal sort of ideas, but then plus also the fantastical, because it turns out that Artemis is actually right. There are fairies and gnomes and so on. He manages to crack their code, captures a fairy, but ends up on the same side.
Well, as plots go and protagonists, anti-heroes, that's pretty good.
It's really good fun. You know, the reason I read these kind of books is because, you know, they are good fun. They're good adventures. They're funny, interesting characters. Mm. You know, it's a good ride, basically.
You've got me intrigued now.
Yeah, it is good fun. And that kind of, you know, the idea of the fairies and so on, it's not necessarily... You know, it's the idea that kind of magic is the same as science. It's just science that you don't understand.
Yeah.
So, the things that the fairies have, the reason they fly is because they have kind of wing packs that they recharge, and they've got laser guns, and they're in suits, and they've got weapons. You know, it's not all sort of pixie dust and so on. There are things like this that, you know, they have to go and recharge their magical energy from the full moon and so on. So there is a bit of the kind of fantasy in there. But really, it's more like science fiction, I would say.
Right, okay. Well, that will tie in nicely with the book that I'm reading next.
Uh-huh.
But we have to thank Puffin for Artemis Fowl, don't we?
We certainly do. Thank you very much.
It's not out yet, and you've been given an early copy, and we've had to agree not to talk about the ending.
Yeah.
Since I've never read any, that won't be too hard.
No, I know, and I, you know, I'm about to start it, so I don't know what the ending might be yet. I do know that there is going to be something to do with a clone. That this arch enemy character, they have a sort of clone version of her, and they've sort of been waiting for her to reemerge and sort of have one final go at them, basically. Mm. So it's going to be a kind of all guns blazing kind of finale, I think.
Well, after our young adult discussion last week, mm-hmm. That was one of the ones I think I will look at. You know, I've read Charlie Higson, so.
Yeah, and it's the kind of thing where it's a good fun holiday read. It's quick, it's easy, but it is really well written. It's very enjoyable.
Well, from one sort of unique idea to another, the book I'm reading next, it's called Bitter Seeds by Ian Tregillis. A weapon of war, a force for evil. Mm-hmm. Now, you've got a nice bit of Nazi on the cover.
Yeah, yeah. But, some nice sort of skull imagery there.
Well, the idea behind this is I'll read you out a quick quote from Cory Doctorow. Mad English warlocks battling twisted Nazi psychics.
Ooh, so, I like the sound of this already. Excellent.
Raybould Marsh and other members of British intelligence recently seized a damaged reel of film from enemy territory. It appeared to show German troops walking through walls, bursting into flames and hurling tanks into the air from afar.
Fantastic.
And the British obviously have to come up with something to beat that.
Yeah.
So it's meant to be, it's describing itself as a chilling supernatural retelling of World War II events. So, you know, you've got your teenager evil genius with fairies, and I've got sort of psychic supernatural magic Nazis.
Do you know what? A few years ago, I might have scoffed at that. But to be honest, I think that sounds like quite good fun.
I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I think as long as it's sort of like rooted slightly in with realism.
Yeah.
But still kind of got that out there idea. It's a hard thing to pull off.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm quite looking forward to it.
Well, I think actually it does make sense to me that this is coming out now. If we think about the kind of big sort of comic book action films that we've had, you know, something like Captain America.
Well, yes.
It is that kind of mythologized view of the events of World War II, isn't it?
You know, the Nazis were apparently into these sorts of things.
Yeah, absolutely.
Know, well,
Raiders of the Lost Ark. Yeah. You know, that's based on that true idea that, you know, Hitler was very sort of superstitious and wanted to kind of get his hands on these relics and so on. You know, that it's a very sort of well-known aspect of that particular unpleasant group of people.
And it's part of a series.
Oh, right. Yeah.
All the rage now. So it's called The Milkweed Triptych. This is Bitter Seeds, which is book one. Then you've got The Coldest War and Necessary Evil.
Right.
It's apparently have already been out in the States a couple of years ago, but now they're actually being published over here. So once I finish, you know, the sinking of the Titanic under unusual circumstances, I'm going to go straight into that. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I don't see why not. I think it sounds like it could, you know, would be a lot of fun. Yeah. You know, it's a bit out there, but there's nothing necessarily wrong with that.
It's not my usual read, I have to admit.
No.
I don't really read a lot of, I suppose that could be called science fiction or fantasy in that sort of
probably,
genre.
Yeah, somewhere, yeah, somewhere around there.
Which I've only dipped my toe into a few times, but I'll let you know.
Excellent, I look forward to it. Okay, so that brings you up to speed on what we've been reading lately and what we're about to get on to reading. But we're going to do something slightly different next week. Rob and I are both part of Bookplate Book Club, which you can find on Twitter at Bookplate Books. We meet at the University of Essex once a month, and we thought it might be interesting to talk about the book that we are discussing as part of our book club. That will be The Sisters Brothers by Patrick DeWitt, which both of us are nearly finished reading.
Yeah, you're a bit further than I am, but yeah.
A little bit further on. I'm sure we'll be done in time. Yeah. That's the main thing. Yeah. So we'll be bringing you some of the opinions from the other book club members as well as our own.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Big part of a book group. That's what I read the marriage plot as.
Mm.
Having some food, having some drink, and then sitting around and talking about books.
Yes, that's great. Even it's not something I'd done really before, and I've been to a couple now and I've really enjoyed it. So I'm looking forward to carrying that on.
Mm.
If any of you have read The Sisters Brothers and would like to share your opinion with us, please do so. We're at Word Adventures on Twitter, or you can find us www.adventureswithwords.com, and you can like our page on Facebook as well. Thanks very much for listening, and see you next time. Adventures with Words is brought to you by Audible. Try Audible free for 30 days and download any audiobook for free. To start your free trial, go to www.adventureswithwords.com/audible.